So maybe if you wish, giving a few moments just to feel yourself. How are you? Am I loud enough? Sometimes it can happen when hugging, being hugged, and there's not even the question, how are you, but the feeling of someone feeling you, receiving you, meeting you. So kind of that sort of feeling with oneself, maybe. And just letting that open mind continue. There might be what comes to your notice first. You feel achy in your back or tired or worried or relieved or whatever. And just leaving the door open for what else might be happening as well. So we don't need to kind of go necessarily looking for something to be happening, but just hanging out and letting it come forth, whatever is happening for you. Really noticing, if you please, the tendency that can come of feeling like, oh, I'm on retreat, so I should be a certain way. Or I'm in a meditation, so certain things are not allowed. I shouldn't be grumpy, or I shouldn't be feeling something erotic, or I shouldn't be having pain, or whatever. And so just noticing that filter that might start to come in place and feeling how that feels, but knowing it's not true. It's important to practice letting everything be welcome. Not saying that we enjoy feeling arrogant or embarrassed or whatever, or pain in the body, painful memory. It's not to say we enjoy it, but it is sometimes here. And perhaps even more importantly, letting the honesty extend not only to what's difficult that we don't like, but the sometimes more subtle places in mind and body, in history and mood that might be okay. Even though in other ways we feel really not okay. And sometimes this is a really tender and intense fight inside. We might feel disloyal to the pain or the wound or the worry, to allow our honesty to accommodate where there's also okayness. And if possible, leaving room for it all. Which can mean leaning towards the okay. There's often a tendency to give more room for the not okay, even if we're also in denial about the not okay at the same time. So not needing to manage it or present it or make it be a certain way according to your conditioning, but just noticing what it is. And what's most noticeable. And then the very important releasing of a tight grip on that to feel what else is also noticeable. as part of our friendship with ourselves, getting to know what tends to come first to our attention. Is it body? Is it emotion? Is it futurizing, catastrophizing, ignoring, trying to be chill or some certain way? And even though that can be kind of forcefully coming to your attention, what else? Maybe the breeze on the skin, for example. Maybe the way the core of your body is in touch with the ground, in relationship with gravity. And then again, maybe a memory from when you were 5 years old or 5 years ago or whatever. So just what comes first to your notice, and is that maybe a tendency or conditioning or habit? And then what comes next available? What comes next? What comes last? What are you most reluctant to acknowledge? Could be a little bit like a speed date with yourself. And unlike a speed date, it's a speed date for an arranged marriage that there's no way out of. And so really patient in our conversation with what we are. All that is given. And there is a phenomenon that we're not so familiar with, but I have a lot of friends in India who it's the normal thing to be in an arranged marriage. And there's a phenomenon of falling in love with your arranged partner. It actually happens many times, not always, of course. That seems to come from that utter acceptance that this is our life. And that it's not our job to try to engineer it according to our preferences. And so the not our job is a major practice for us in the mainstream preference culture. To feel towards friendliness with all of that that you are. Even what we don't like at all. A kind of confidence that there might be a way. To work with all these intersecting forces and characteristics and history, biology, towards freedom. Towards something better than matching my list of preferences. Through being relieved of the job, of being on alert, with a heightened sense towards preference, and more of a falling into, wait a second, what is this even? Do I know what I am or not? And can I be okay with not knowing? What happens with and accepting that actually there is a lot of not knowing? And if possible, acknowledging not knowing if I feel that I do know what I am or what a human being is or what life is. Is that kind of knowing, that sort of thought or ideology, is it really relevant? Does it cover all those deep layers of our experience? And what happens when there's a, like, well, what if I don't know who I am? If I can't really conclusively, I don't have a conclusion. I don't have utter control over what I'm experiencing. I don't have much control, even. Does that not knowing, kind of to acknowledge that, does that just simultaneously start to open ourselves to all that we are, that we receive in the moment? Of ourselves and of our perceptions, cool and warm, heavy and light, sounds that are inner and outer. And we just start to lose track of all those things we wanted to fix about ourselves and thought we should be able to, like the fact that I snore. Or am unhappy in my job or whatever. Letting that be kind of more distant. Coming into. A sort of open door of what's going on now. And do we dare to let that be a little more vivid, to really notice what we do notice, that the wind touching the skin is really here and gone instantaneously. And we're here for that. There's some presence in us that's way faster than the thinking mind or the me. That wants to maybe kind of know about the wind or have a story that the wind is actually shifting. But just more into the micro. Fluid instant. So not a distancing from myself, but a coming more into what we might have thought of as the unconscious mind, but actually how awake it is and how quick. And then just noticing that the me arrives later and says, oh, that's the wind on my elbow. Or that's a crow in a pine tree. And we can just actually feel. So we don't have to decide anything. We can actually feel that what comes later, the image of a crow, the image in your mind with your eyes closed of Jaya speaking, that comes later and is less alive. And meanwhile, the actual sort of front edge of the wave of our actual experience is still going on, while meanwhile I'm occupied with naming and remembering and associating or ignoring, distracting, whatever. The live edge is continuing. And somewhere in us, we're there, we're with it, we're here. So while I'm distracted, something is alive in me, a wide receptivity. So it's important to notice how eagerly we would like to add something to our experience as meditation, and to practice the opposite. To notice the adding and how that feels, and then to again and again uncover the actual receptivity, which is also an intimacy with life. With something beyond what we think we are. In the really simple things, like a sound that we just heard before we could name it. And so finding your ways in yourself of kind of snuggling down under the part that wants to work on something, to be busy, to fix, to have an occupation. The way that a dog might snuggle in to a spot, its bed or the ground somewhere. Or someone's lap or whatever. So not a snuggling into what you think you are, but a snuggling into a more relaxed, open, receiving state that allows, that opens, that is open to sound and body. Sound and body as things that are happening that seem to have as if a life of their own, despite what we think we are, despite my story of me. Even when the me is unrelaxed, maybe we can start to find our own way, your own way in yourself, to access that relaxed, accepting state. So even when there's non-acceptance going on, there's also, we just heard that sound. And just playing with, if possible, more relaxed, more relaxed. Less covering up, less doing, less invading, and more noticing that the experiencing is going on, is ongoing, has continuity. And the disruptions of me coming in and wanting to fix something or say that something is right or wrong, that those disruptions don't have continuity. Suddenly I'm in a cloud of remembering being at the grocery store or being in an argument or being at the beach or whatever, or imagining. And then somehow something in us can go, oh, I'm at the grocery store in my mind. And also I'm not at the grocery store. There's the breeze, there's my butt. So just gradually to locate where you are settling into, not in the controlling part, but in the already here part. That's usually more accessible by feeling into the ground and the lower body or the back. And so the noticing that I'm distracted is also a realization that some part is not distracted, and a falling into that other place. Like, oh, the sounds are already being heard, the body already registered, the sense of space around already accepted. And kind of magical, fluid, open-ended. And what helps you to come in deep in yourself, somewhere deeply natural in yourself. Deeply awake already. Just to the ongoing sound body moment. Such a receptivity. There's such a great vast quantity of sound and body coming in or through, just given and received. And maybe allowing sounds to give a sense of a fairly large space, treetops, forest floor, coming into our animal body that hears the shape of the landscape, and is in our landscape. Listening literally made of our landscape as we breathe. And so you might like to have a sense of settling into the body in the landscape, and so we're settling into a wider space sometimes. Sometimes way wider. And that's, it's not a necessarily an aspect of imagination so much as a recovering our something more deeply natural. Recovering our animal sense of actually being somewhere. And being that welcome and that in. And so sometimes in that wider space, still the sense of a warm body that has some solidity and weight and volume, it takes up that much space. And maybe as we're relieved of our occupations of fixing things or righting and wronging, the relieving might allow the body to have a sense of spreading and sinking, which might also feel like an opening, transparency even. And then just the simple, allowing that same quick perception, immediacy that sounds have. To have access to the body, the immediacy of what we call body. So much and so little. Happening by itself, sort of given, without or despite our interference. Clearly not our doing. And so if possible, a sense of really receiving this really simple body experience. Maybe the back, maybe the lower belly, maybe the feet, maybe the breath. Where you feel more connected, or more just possible at all to feel something of the body. Or just really in a kind of fulcrum, just that place where you feel the definite ground, the body happy to release or to feel the full support. And that happiness, a kind of opening as well. So ground and openness. Towards where it would be a happy thing to stay. To stay to let the staying continued be continued. as if by not doing, as if even the staying could start to be continuous effortlessly. As if the staying could be continued for you. That alignment. And of course, sometimes there's just crazy mind and you're really working at coming back to the breath or the back or both. And doing that when needed. And then enjoying when it's no longer needed. Or sometimes making a shift to where it's not too much heavy work, where you let yourself change what you are paying attention to. If you enjoy sound, or if you would enjoy tuning to a deep wish, or a song, prayer, image, then giving yourself a break, finding a way that there's less effort necessary to start to be tuning in. But as simple as possible, being tuned. Like a tree slightly adjusting alignment with the wind. May all beings be at peace. And may our practice and lives be devoted in lifestyle and inner life towards the momentum of awakening for all, including ourselves. Are there any questions or anything to share? Could you hear? No. She first said, "I'm dozing off a lot." Anybody else? Usually, the first 2 days at least, there's a lot of sleeping. And it's up to you to feel for yourself, but it's also when it's a new thing, it's hard to know. And so, I want to just encourage you on. Every retreat, most people sleep a lot the first couple of days, and it seems to work out really well in the whole overall picture of the retreat, but even during that time, it doesn't seem to be only like sleeping off my tiredness and then I can start my retreat. It seems to be that a lot is moving already. So you know yourself more than I do, but that's generally speaking the pattern. And also in terms of the instructions, it's a weird thing, but there seems to be a way that it's not so important to catch every word. It's a mystery to me, but there seems to be a way that there's some other communication that happens. I don't know how. But I do know that there have been times where I was listening to both of my main teachers and or meditating in a retreat-like situation with them, and the states of mind that were closer to sleep, I found a certain kind of clarity and receptivity that was really different from when I was awake. And sometimes it seemed like the real communication happened when I was nearly asleep. And when I was asleep, I don't know because I don't remember. But so it's not that sleep is the same as meditation, but first of all, most of us have a, what could we call it, sleep debt, or we have some sleeping to do as part of coming back to ourselves and to more of an honoring of life rather than honoring of as me asleep. And also there is a kind of, we could call it a premeditative, or it's, in a, generally speaking, if we just, meditation includes mindfulness, it includes deep meditation, it includes the process and path towards deep meditation, then okay, a meditative state. But we could also call it on the way towards deep meditation. There's a state that's like sleep that isn't sleep, but in the sense of the eye is not awake. And that is something that is to be gone through on the way to meditation as well. And it's almost impossible to know that we're even in it, much less, you know, to say, oh, that's not sleep, that's alaya or whatever. So I find it really worthwhile to leave room for sleep in the meditation hall for all of those reasons and probably others. But so, and then for the, we mentioned yesterday about posture lying down, not to assume that, I mean, you, Hannah and I spoke about, I was encouraging her to put cushions under her knees and not just lie flat, even if lying flat is comfortable-ish for you, but it's somehow different with meditation. One thing that comes to mind would be, in all the meditations other than this one, it's silent. I'm usually not giving guidance, so that you have the sometimes hard job of practicing rather than having me doing it. And so you might find that having your feet facing that way and your head facing this way, if you're lying on your back, is already a help for the way the pressure falls. And then if we could come up with something that would be where you're, you'd have cushions. I'll show you without cushions. Imagine that I have cushions under my heels. And my heels are a little higher than my knees, higher than my hips. Sometimes it's even important to have the cushion not really so much under the knees as really right up at the top of the thighs. Let's see if I try this. It's really getting the sitting bone also a bit. So playing with that angle. And let's see if we can come up with something for your feet. So try straight. Everybody is different. So maybe I was wrong in encouraging you to put that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
The other thing is that I have a challenge staying on my back. So because it starts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why.
How about the other ways of lying?
Yeah. I usually have.
Do that. If you can find a way to do it, that's anyway, tends to be deeper. For most people, for more people, lying face down. And then also, if you're like me and you snore, then it's usually better side lying or face down to have less sound. Okay. So let's have a little bit of walking meditation instructions. Standing, please. To start with, it might be good to be on, yoga mat or the ground, nothing, not too soft, so you can balance with your eyes closed. So if you like to have, try having your feet comfortably apart and the eyes closed, if you like. And noticing that there's the question of what to do with your shoulders, arms, and hands. That's obviously completely different when you're standing. And standing is also a great meditation posture. Sometimes it's actually surprisingly intense and strong. So if you find that you want to do some standing meditation and you feel heat or dizziness or nausea, that's sometimes happens, and then just stop standing for a while. So the hands, you know, the Jinshin postures can be nice. There's a couple more that are good standing that are not as good lying or sitting. So one is to give yourself a hug this way with your hands in your armpits. Another is also a kind of a hug, which doesn't look that comfortable, but it actually can be really nice for standing or walking. It's different for your balance, but. So just playing with whatever experiment you want to do with your arms and hands. Behind you, in front of you. The outer wrist is really nice for calming the nervous system. And tuning to the more subtle. So that's one option. And then if we just have a few moments just standing quietly, feeling gravity, like letting your body give into gravity a bit. So maybe softening the knees. Maybe you feel some adjustments in your hips or pelvic bowl or in your jaw. Eyes. Shoulders. And then the first thing might be just to feel, is there somewhere that you would, your energy would kind of gather and feel like a good natural fit of a place to hang out or focus. So for some people, being in the lower belly pretty much all the time, in lying or sitting, as well as walking and standing. And it could be, you know, really inside the lower belly, or it could be the lower belly that's also open to the limbs and trunk that come from there. Or the lower belly and down the legs into the feet. And if you want to play with, if you like, just shift the weight from side to side. Maybe not lifting the feet, just for balance. Just letting the weight come mostly onto one side. Maybe even lifting part of the free foot. Shift to the other side. And if you want to just play with that. Do you already kind of notice where your attention or energy comes to in your body? It could be the whole body, it could be more the feet. When you introduce movement, and so if, for example, you find yourself really in the feet, or especially the back of the feet, the ankle, heel area, for example, that might be a good place to start with your first walking meditation, just anchoring or pouring presence there as you move. And as with any meditation, noticing when there starts to be that alert or trying to or setting up of a goal, and just really enjoying the chance to feel the lines of tension more clearly than usual that start to come in when you're like, okay, right, be in the heels. And then that continual, that possibility to discover that the heels are already doing themselves and feeling themselves. And the me is another thing. And so it's kind of weird and almost spooky sometimes, because we think it's going to be me paying attention to my heels. But we actually notice that that me part is really its own world, its own thing. And then there's this kind of wilder life of the heels themselves that are just pretty steadily, mysteriously doing themselves. We didn't make them. It's pretty weird thing that we all have them. And so many creatures also, you know, so it's so personal and yet, wow. And personal also. Mine and not mine. I did not make my heels. And yet, the feeling of the heels is right here with me. And if that could be the kind of inner atmosphere, a sense of that more vast picture. So utterly simple and yet also a lot of room for the mystery. And then also room for an enjoyment that's in the really simple. So feeling how sensitive we are, how different it is, each little tiny shift of the foot when the heel touches the ground, when that much weight comes into the foot is different from when that much weight comes in, and wow, now the other heel is lifting. And it's not excitement, but it is, I think there is a pleasure to uncover in coming into that ability to be sensitive to what usually we would completely ignore and think of as unimportant. So unfiltering. And then allowing that pleasure is an important aspect of having a sustaining spiritual practice. So we might have the assumption that we're supposed to try to be objective and neutral and equanimous, unmoved. But if we don't allow this juicy part of our, wow, this more the more eros of even just the heel lifting off the ground, feeling itself, the air, its own strength and architecture, etc. So when it feels even a little bit pleasant, really allowing that, not letting the automatic ignoring of that take over. So if you would find a place where you could just walk without having to think about where you're going to go. So you might just walk back and forth or around in a circle. And sometimes in walking meditation, the idea that I'm meditating seems to sometimes activate shoulder tension. And so just noticing that and pausing when you feel it, maybe finding something that you like to look at or coming back into your body, letting the shoulders be off duty. Or sometimes they will not come off duty. So it's like, okay. Feeling the tension, there's also the feet or the belly. And I would just further suggest that at least once a day you might go on a wander. You might go on a walk in a childlike way or a wild animal-like way where maybe you don't exactly know where you're going, but keep track of where you're going. It could be a near or far kind of a walk. At least once a day, I would suggest that. So, one, you know, mostly really simple, where you're not having to think about should I go left or right, and maybe if you like, one at least once a day. I'm not sure where you're going, but you are sure how to get back. Is there any questions? and any time you'd rather stay still, do practice this in stillness in the hall, feel free. But if you stay and then the next meditation's about to start, please make sure that you're ready to stay the whole next meditation, right? So we're honoring the schedule. So not just because you did 2 hours straight and then you stay for 5 minutes of the next meditation that you just want to get up and leave when you're ready, but kind of checking that, am I staying for this whole next meditation? And I just want to, for me, it feels like we could still do the 12 o'clock meditation here. Does that feel okay in terms of air quality, I mean? And hopefully that's when, by that time, if the predictions are correct, we'll have more like we had yesterday, a bit more clear air again. So, but if you, anyone who feels like any time going into that downstairs area,